I
Sean, I know because you're one of my regular callers on my weekly show on WEOS in Geneva, New York, that you've been homeless yourself. Did you have a hard time getting food when you were homeless?
Sometimes. It varied. There was a caller earlier that was talking about migrating, and we hitchhiked a lot. And you could, if you went to a certain places, you would be more likely to get a handout. And but there was a lot of hungry nights, a lot of sleeping in abandoned cars or cars in people's driveways, and getting out before 6 o'clock or whenever 5 o'clock, whenever it was time to go to work for. We figured it was time to go to work for these people. And there was a lot of being out on really horrible nights. But, I thank God I survived. I was very young. You get what you can. And, it's one thing that comes through from that experience is how really resilient, humanity is. In all senses of the word, how resilient your own body is, and how resilient the humanity of a lot of people around you can be. But
Sean, do you feel you were scarred by your experience of being homeless, or do you feel you've recovered from it?
Oh well, you know, I'm on my feet, but I don't think I've ever been the same. I don't think I'll ever forget it. And on nights like this, when it's just the snow plows aren't even making a dent in the snow on the road, and you can't even see where the road begins outside my window. It's just coming down in curtains. You can't help but remember things like that. And it's night after night after night every winter.
Nobody. Can you ask the caller how, if they have any impressions of how the people who helped him when he was homeless, did he think that the charity system was hard for them or had made them hardened or more generous or anything, any impressions of how it affected the caregivers or helpers?
Sean, can you hear that? You can hear that,
yeah.
Can't you?
It's like working, I saw it as they were like working in an overcrowded hospital.
Uh-huh.
You care, but you get so tired. Have you ever been homeless, nobody? Or in a similar circumstance?
Well, all right, I'll answer that, but let me thank you for the call, and then I'll answer
okay,
it.
Okay, thank you.
Let me answer this quickly. I always say that I've never been homeless. And technically, though, I have, in the sense that I spent a year and a half in my car going from place to place, staying at friends, staying at relatives. I didn't have a home, but I wasn't sleeping in the car, and actually, I was in more homes than most people. I was always in somebody's home, so I don't really feel that I was homeless, although technically, I guess I would qualify.
I was just, the other day I was looking, there was an issue, the Oregonian, our local newspaper here, has been having these, you know, 25 years ago, 50 years ago little things, and they had a picture of a Hooverville from the Depression. And actually it looked, you know, it was like this little row of shacks, and they looked kind of, you know, they were small, little one-room shacks, but they were clean. And they had, you know, like a little lane to walk going down in front of them, and there were little gardens and stuff like that. I mean, this is something that these people were allowed to do. And you know, I mean, they weren't camping out under a bridge. They had a little, you know, a little roof over their heads, and they had what looked from this picture like a pretty clean place to live.
You know, Per, what bothers me about that is that the last time we had this kind of thing, and as you point out, they were less harassed, as far as I know, we were in the midst of what was called the Great Depression. The stock market had crashed.
That's right.
Now we got hundreds of thousands of people on the street, and the stock market is booming.
Yeah, well, this brings up a real good question. If we can't take care of people now, or won't take care of people now, what are we going to do when times go hard?
Well, that's a, let me direct that question to Tom and Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Tom, if we're stretched out to the breaking point now, what would happen to the chain if we had hundreds of thousands of more people on the streets, if we had a recession or something like that?
I shudder to think of that possibility. The thoughts of the people in those shacks diminishes us all. I think that as a human race, we should be ashamed. I think that as Elizabeth was alluding to earlier, the charities cannot handle much more. It was initially responded as a temporary response 20 years ago, and you've got 60-year-old women that are working in basements that are trying to feed the people in their own churches. Now, 20 years later, they're 80-year-old women working out of their church basement trying to feed the needs of the people that don't even go to their churches. It's really, really expanded at an astounding rate, and I'm afraid that the network is running out of steam.
I got to ask, I mean, at what point did we start really buying into shelter beds as a solution to homelessness? I mean, I can remember when we opened these suckers up in the early 80s, they were all supposed to be temporary. Not because we were going to put people out on the street, but because we weren't going to need shelters anymore. And we seem to equate discussing whether or not we're addressing homelessness by how many shelters we're opening up in our local communities. And we need to create the political base to have homeless people with whatever providers will happen to stand up alongside them to say that this is not the direction that we're supposed to be going in, because we are now seeing government turn our shelters into prisons.
I used to drive around at night looking for a safe place to sleep, and I would drive by houses and apartment buildings, and I would look at them, and I'd think to myself, you know, somebody in there has a sofa or a living room floor, you know, they wouldn't mind if I just kind of, you know, slept until, you know, dawn or whatever. I wouldn't even have to take a shower, and then just, you know, just to have a warm place to sleep. And then when I stopped being homeless, I mean, occasionally I slept on friends' sofas and stuff, but when that stopped, it was like all of a sudden I started feeling the, I used to have a word for it. I can't remember it right offhand, but the humiliation of it, you know, it took quite a while for me to actually get rid of that.
I'm kind of fascinated by the idea that you're having the homeless call, and I have a question that may sound kind of dumb, but how is it that you get the word out to the homeless? Where are most of them listening, since I imagine many homeless people cannot afford radios?
Well, that's a good question. We've done a whole bunch of things to make sure that homeless people can participate. First of all, there's a special number we've disseminated through homeless providers of one kind or another, shelters throughout the country, that's not being given out on the air, just to make sure there's a line free for homeless people, those who are able to listen, to call in. Second, there have been places where homeless people have gathered to be able to listen to the broadcast. For instance, in Champaign, they've been keeping at the shelters a special room open in each of the shelters so that people can listen to the radio and have access to a phone, because everybody recognizes it's important for homeless people to be heard. And then I think the other thing is, there's just more homeless people out there than anybody realizes. Informally homeless people, there's a couple of million people a year cycling in and out of homelessness. There could be 10 or 12 million people at any given time, maybe in this country, who've been homeless in the last decade, maybe more. And so it's just surprising how many people hear the broadcast and resonate with it, because that has been their experience. Let's take another call if we can. Is Jeff from Boulder, Colorado there?
Hello?
Jeff, is that you?
Yeah.
Jeff, are you a homeless person?
Yes.
And, I'm going to turn you over to Mike, and Mike can ask you some questions, because
okay.
you're a homeless person, and I know that that's something that you're probably on WGN, you don't get a lot of calls like that, Mike. So,
I dare say we don't get any calls from homeless people on WGN radio. Jeff,
yeah?
Can you tell me a little bit about your particular situation?
Yeah, I was homeless in California on and off for a year and a half or so, and things weren't going too good. A friend said, oh, man, you can get work in Boulder, so we came here.
And how long ago was that?
Several years ago.
And did you get work?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you off the street now?
Right now I am, but I'm thinking I'm going to go back to it because it's not worth being off that much, you know.
Now, why would you...
There's not much life has to offer people on the fringe.
So you're saying that you can get a job, but the quality of the job is going to be such that you might actually be better off being on the street.
Well, sometimes it's easier on the street, you know. If you can pull in $150 a week on the street, it's easy to live, you know. But whereas you have to start paying for bills, all of a sudden, it's impossible almost. One thing I wanted to say, though, about radios is when I was homeless, it was real important to have a radio, a couple batteries a week, so you could listen to the radio at night.
So
as far as begging for money, I never begged for money. I always worked, you know, but people that do it, it's not easy for them to do that. And, you know, like it says in the Bible, when somebody asks you, don't ask them why, just give and give freely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people out there aren't begging money for the most, but there's a few scammers here and there, but most people, if they're asking for something, they need it. You know, I mean, they're not sitting there getting rich. I'll pretend to be homeless.
Well, you know, that's another thing, too. I have to admit that people who ask for money on the street, you can look at them, and if you're really hard-hearted, you can say, oh, yeah, they're scamming you. But usually those people who are scamming you don't even have decent clothes on, don't have...
They're the alcoholics, the hardcores. And, you know, really, are you really, you know, hurting them by buying them one more drink? They're already on the path of ruin. And for the most part, most of them are going to stay there once they're at that point. You also got homeless people that ended up homeless without meaning to, which is what happened to me. You know, I didn't mean to be homeless, but I was, you know, and it happened to me a couple times for a couple years before I could really get away from it. It's a vicious... Once you're there, it's hard to get out, you know?
Yeah, you said that you took a job and you're thinking of going back. You haven't gone back to the street yet, I take it.
No, but I sometimes think, you know, hey, it's just as easy, you know?
That's fascinating to me and a little bit disturbing that you think...
It's also more fun, too, really. The time I had on the street, you know, I had a good time. I met a lot of people, you know, it was fun.
Well, then why would any homeless person ever want to get a job if it's more fun to be on the street?
To qualify that, when I was on the street, you know, one of the things I really desired was a room with electricity and heat and I could actually stand up in, you know, and, it's like the grass was green on the other side, you know. Sometimes it was like, sometimes it was okay, sometimes it wasn't, you know. When it was raining for a week at a time in California, it wasn't that great, you know.
Jeff, if I understand you correctly, though, what you're saying is that being marginally employed and unable to pay the bills is not necessarily better than being on the street sometimes. But supposing
exactly.
You had a job that was paying you a lot of money, would that be better than being on the street?
Of course. Or even a decent salary.
Now,
a livable wage, you know.
Jeff, you're a very well-spoken individual. It seems to me that there might be an opportunity for you to find that.
I used to work really physical work when I was younger. I was a carpet layer and a furniture mover, and I hurt my back and it suffered years and years of pain and not being able to always work full time and never really got what I should out of it. You know, I kind of let myself end up that way, I guess, because I didn't do anything about it. But, you know, I found myself partially disabled, you know, but not being able to work full time sometimes. You know, had jobs making $15 an hour, making good money and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't always able to do it, you know.
And once you got into that homeless mode, one of the things that nobody just said that I think is a very important point here is that if you're homeless or you're on the fringe, it's almost it's that fringe area that is so difficult because if you can't break free of the low-paying jobs, those terrible wage jobs, you might as well go back to be homeless. Because the responsibility of being in a low-paying job is tougher, actually, than being on the street. Is this what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, if I have to call my mom a couple times a year to ask her to help me with rent, is that really worth it? You know, whenever I could just be living on the streets, hanging out, you know, meeting some people. I actually enjoyed the company of the people that I met on the street and felt pretty free when I was doing it.
You know, they were talking about people on welfare and they should do their work fair and and all of this. So I have always said, well, what about workfare for so-called stockholders? You know what I'm saying? People who sit on their butt and watch numbers go up and down, they don't work, you know. I was like, exactly what does a CEO do for all the money that they get? They are the ones who are getting welfare or payments or whatever off the backs of other people because they feel that their money works for them. I want to know how many times has anybody seen money get on a bus and go to a factory at 6 o'clock in the morning? How many times has anybody seen money drive the bus to the factory? That's not money. Those are people.
And what would you say about your experience of homelessness? I mean, what would you want people to know about that experience and what it meant to you?
That it's a, particularly I would think people should know that it's not something that you overcome overnight. That it takes a significant amount of time and there are significant obstacles in your way every step of the way, and you don't it's not something that someone like just sets aside. You work your way out of it.
Well, I'm just curious, since you're having a lot of people that are actually living on the streets right now calling in, if some of them would kind of want to address ways that we can engage them more in services that we're trying to offer. We have a lot of services where you can continue your education or get skills training, life skills, work on drug and alcohol problems. But it seems that a lot of people, by the time that they get to the services, already have their self-esteem really torn down, and kind of have a hopelessness about their future. They seem to see themselves as homeless chronically. So I'm wondering what kind of things we can do to kind of get them moving in the right direction and get them to look forward past a life of homelessness and a time when they're stable.
Well, let's hear what Dave and Sherry have to say. Dave, you're homeless now, are you not?
Yes, I am. Brad, great question. I think being a homeless person, the thing, and having gone through several shelter programs. I've been homeless off and on since 1992. Been through three or four shelter programs before I figured out that they weren't the answer. The problem is that we're living in a country that's generating poverty. We're living in a country that has a political system that supports poverty and homelessness. So the answer to the question of how people who are interested in helping homeless people, the answer is we don't need more shelters. We don't need more charity. We don't need more programs. We need political power. I, as a homeless person, I don't want charity. I don't want a shelter. I want political power. I want my human rights.
Well, Sherry, look, it makes perfect sense to me. You know, when they say we should have more politeness in the national discourse, makes perfect sense. You go up to someone and you say very politely, gee, it's better for all of us if everybody in our country can eat. It's better for all of us if everybody in our country has a place to live. It's better for all of us if everybody in our country has a sense that they are participating in the community of America. Now, personally, if you said that to me, I'd be totally convinced already. So I'm sure you walk up to people by whatever words and in the government and elsewhere, and you say similar kinds of things, and you say them politely. Where does it get you?
Absolutely nowhere, and it's really sad. We always try and negotiate, try to do whatever we possibly can to get families off the street and try to do something about their situation. But even children that have tracheas in their neck and tubes through their stomachs, we can no longer get into shelter here in Philadelphia. And also, the city now is in such crisis that you can't even get on the waiting list for affordable housing. Before, you could just, like, stay on the waiting list for, like, about 10 years. And they made an announcement that you can't even get on the waiting list anymore in this city. So the problem is really bad. And so we believe we have a moral responsibility to break the law in order to keep people alive. And so we will continue to build tent cities and take over abandoned houses and do those kinds of things that aren't seen as polite in order to ensure that women and children don't die in this country.
Sky, what's the biggest thing you think you learned from your period there when you were on the road?
As crazy as it may sound, I learned how beautiful people really can be. You know, I mean, you get when you're sitting on the street asking for change, you get a lot of people that ignore you, but then you have a lot of people also that come up and talk to you and are really kind. And, you know, like earlier somebody mentioned not being able to tell when it's a scam or whether it's someone really in need.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to, you know, deny them because you can't tell. You can get a loaf of bread and, you know, cheap little package of lunch meat. And, you know, if they're sitting there, I'm hungry. You know, one of the best things that anybody did, I was, you know, one day I was really, really, really hungry. And someone came along and said, you know, within 5 minutes of my sitting there starting to ask, somebody came along and said, oh, you're hungry? Well, come with us. We're just going to this restaurant right here.
Brian, let me ask you a question. Brian, how do you know you're going to be homeless?
Well, because of the change. Well, my dad, he was like 20 years ago or so, like the first person in Placer County to get on HUD when they first started here. And now that this year they're changing things to where, well, his income's been so low that they've been paying all of his rent, plus giving him like $80 for utilities every month, because the only other income he has is $90 a month from the Air Force and food stamps. And mm-hmm. Now the program's going to change to where they're not going to pay the utilities anymore, and he's going to have to pay out of his $90 check like 30% or something like that, to where really not going to have any money left for anything. He won't be able to afford to live anywhere. And as pitiful as it might sound here, I'm 28 years old, still living in his backyard. But
are you able to work, Brian?
I'm able, but I'm so far away from anything without any transportation. That's another issue, too.
Yeah.
If they really wanted to solve the problems, why can't they give me $127 a month for transportation instead of food stamps?
So that you could work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd love to work. I'd love to feel useful for a change.
So
I just want to explain something, Marianne, that you touched on about the mixed income housing and what this means, which is that public housing that used to be reserved for low-income people, they got the idea that they wanted to have not just low-income people, but also people in higher income brackets, make it mixed, which is okay, except that that meant there were fewer spaces for low-income people, and they did not expand the housing pool for low-income people. So what it ultimately amounts to, correct me if I'm wrong, Marianne, is that it's a net loss for poor people.
It's a huge net loss for poor people. I mean, one example of it just is in Chicago. They have had 24,000 units that is going to be reduced to about 2,700 for people whose incomes are 30% or less of area median income. If the current plan proposed by the Chicago Housing Authority goes through, it's extremely frightening, and it's happening. And we argued against that bill very strongly precisely because of that.
Barbara from Los Angeles, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Yes, I'd like to say that, you know, there's some of us that are housed, but we're not housed well. I live in a board and care, and I don't know what they're called in the rest of the country, but this board and care is for people with mental disabilities, and some people come here from the jails, and some people come here from other sources like the mental hospitals, and it's substandard housing, and you lose your dignity when you walk in the door. If you want to stay here and have food and shelter, you have to give up your dignity and some of your Fourth Amendment rights. And I never hear people talking about the board and cares, and we're a significant part of, you know, the poor population, and we shouldn't be forgotten and disappeared either, you know, even though we're not homeless.
Claudia, let me start with you. Do homeless people here in Champaign have any difficulty whatsoever in accessing health care? We're told that it's the poor people actually have it better because they've got all these things like Medicaid and Medicare. Is this true?
Well, I think what you're talking about is a huge myth, that there is some sort of a safety net when it comes to the health care system. And the reality is that there isn't. And whatever exists is a patchwork system that is created at the local level. In terms of national statistics, it's important for people to understand that less than half of homeless folks are actually enrolled in Medicaid. And so when they need health care, a lot of times the only way that they're going to get any health care is through the emergency room or possibly through some public health services. In Champaign-Urbana, it's absolutely a problem. There isn't any safety net. If you don't have money, you can't get health care. If you don't have health insurance, you can't get health care. In fact, the way that the system is set up is such that we have a local community health clinic here, which is designed to serve the medically underserved. However, they have policies like that if you have ever filed for bankruptcy against them, you can never return to that clinic for health care. And that's the clinic that is designed to serve the folks who can't get in anyplace else. And so this is the kind of system we have. Health care is more and more a gated community, and that's true at the local level. I think it's also important to frame the issue rather than also talking about the health problems that homeless folks face. I think we need to step back and also understand that the healthcare system is a contributing factor to homelessness and to economic hardship of people. For example, the one serious injury or a health problem, such as a disease, can wipe out an entire family in terms of their economic stability. And in fact, the lack of health care is the number one reason that families who have left the welfare system go back on welfare. And so health care and the lack of affordable health care is a huge economic problem. And so a lot of the folks who do end up in a situation where they become homeless may have had previous serious health conditions that may be chronic and become worse as a result of homelessness, whether it's high blood pressure, diabetes, and things like that.
Billy, what's on your mind tonight? Are you a homeless person?
No, but I am on HUD, and I did get my rent raised $100 when they restructured everything, and it just squeezes things a little bit tighter. But what I wanted to tell you is that there was an article in the paper a couple of years ago about the homeless who were sleeping around the county building under shrubs and shelters, you know, that they could find. And the police came in to the orders of the city council, and they threw away sleeping bags and personal effects. And among those effects was a homeless woman's her insulin for her diabetes. And I was so infuriated, I went down there and I castigated the police and the city fathers, because it's bad enough these people are down and out. And
Billy, I wish I could say this was an isolated case, but whenever they do these sweeps in L.A. and Atlanta, all around the country,
mm-hmm.
They not only throw out medication, they'll throw out identification as well. So people who even have Medicaid cards lose their cards.
Yes, they threw out everything. They just scooped it up and tossed it in the dumpster.
You're a homeless woman, Jennifer.
Huh?
What problems do you have accessing health care?
Well, healthcare in Los Angeles is almost non-existent. Basically, for people who are out on the streets, If you need medical care and you're homeless, you basically have to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, going to appointments and, you know, completely focusing and standing in line waiting for health care. If you're temporarily disabled, there are no services available for people who are temporarily disabled. There is no welfare. There is no assistance for people with temporary disabilities. And for people with permanent disabilities, the waiting lists are humongous.
The situation is so dire. Healthcare is such a gated community that 2 weeks ago, I was driving home on a major street here in Champaign-Urbana, and a man threw himself at my truck. And I believe that he was trying to throw himself in front of my truck. Unfortunately, that's not what happened. But when the situation settled down, what ended up happening was that we learned that this man was a homeless man who needed health care, and he had no way of getting the health care that he needed. He was so distraught and so desperate, and he understood that the only way that he could get the health care that he needed was to get into the health system through the emergency room. So he was working very hard to create an emergency, even at the risk of losing his life.
In 1970, we had actually had a surplus of units that were affordable for people who were very low income, a surplus of about 300,000 units nationally. By 1995, that number had shifted until we had a shortage of 4.4 million units. And basically, there was a decline in the number of units over that period of time. Then there was a slight increase in the number of units. But what we have seen dramatically is an increase in the number of renters who are in that category. So it's, you know, it's a simple game of musical chairs that we don't have, we don't produce units that are affordable. And if we want to make it affordable, then we have to figure out how to subsidize it in some way.
Well, we are a subsidized program, and what my clients could afford is anything, you know, from $40 to $300. And, you know, we have a lot of people in this community, a lot of people whose sole source of income is township funds. That's $200 a month. So even if you're paying $40 or $60 a month rent, that means that everything else that you need to pay for in the course of your month, you know, is coming out of that $200.
So you're saying that without a subsidy, these people can't get housing?
Yeah. Yes, that is what I'm saying.
And there was a point in time at the peak when we were probably spending somewhere around $60 billion a year on a whole range of housing and community development programs. We're down to about 20, I think it's about $28 billion now.
It's one bus stop near my house on Fairfax and Rosewood used to have bushes where the homeless could find a little shelter overnight. And what do you think one of our local councilmen did by the name of Mike Feuer? He supported the creation of a park there. You wouldn't believe the whole thing. The bushes were ripped out, and some of the protective trees were ripped out, and they paved the whole thing over, like with Portland cement. So nobody, but nobody finds shelter there. But still, in the morning, if I go out to catch a bus at 7 o'clock in the morning, there may be somebody sleeping on a bench there. And there are persons sleeping on bus benches all around Los Angeles. And I think this is disgraceful. And I keep complaining all the time. Whenever I hear that there's a surplus of budget money in Los Angeles or California State or in the whole USA, I get in touch with the politicians involved, and I say, how can you state there's a surplus when we have all these homeless people who need to have homes?